Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marches never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings. All of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is When God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week. 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarion Styles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarion can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No. Nope.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
up, man?
Same old, same old.
What's up with that boy?
Oh, man. He just a punk, that's all. D put him back on the count, though.
A word? I heard he was out the game.
He was, but he back now.
Where he been at?
At his granny house, he says.
It's granny, huh? I heard he damn near shit his pants when he saw what happened to Omar's bitch.
He just ain't built for this, man. It's heart pump Kool-Aid.
Man. What about you? You built for this shit?
No doubt.
You ready to put the work in? You got heat?
Where y'all at? Alright, when I find y'all, you're gonna get it. Better come out now. Where y'all at? I'm not even playing with y'all right about now. You hear me? Game over. Fuck y'all at? Alright, when I find y'all, I'm beating y'all asses. Now where y'all at? Alright, don't let me find y'all. Yo, check this poop. Little man left us playing shit.
Hey, man, you's a weak ass nigga, man. You should have stayed down in the country, man.
Yo, I'm a nigga, yo.
Fucking brought this on yourself, man.
We boys.
You brought this on yourself.
Man, you gotta be like this, yo. We niggas, man. BC, remember that?
Come on. You wet in your fucking pants like you a little boy. Be a man. Stand up like a motherfucking man.
My niggas, yo.
Man, you said you was a fucking man. Stand up straight.
That's us, man.
Do it, goddammit, if you're gonna...
Garcia Wallace, we're looking for your son.
Where y'all at?
wasn't me who fucked up.
Oh, really? So who did? Why the fuck are we here?
Listen, all you need to do is keep your head through the bail hearing. Got a good shot of bringing you home here.
Then what? Hmm? We gonna take the weight for all the shit in the trunk of that car? Where's Wallace at? Where's the boy, String?
D'Angelo, shut your mouth.
Where's Wallace? That's all I want to know.
Kid, you better think.
Where the fuck is Wallace? Huh? String. String. Look at me. Look at me! Where the fuck is Wallace? Huh? I don't want this Payless man, motherfucker, representing me. I'm gonna get my own man. All right? So just get back in your car and get the fuck back down south.
I ain't you, stupid motherfucker. You made the decision.
Yeah, I made my decision. Where's Wallace at? Where the fuck is Wallace? Where's Wallace, String? String! Where the fuck is Wallace? Huh?
All right. Well, today, open mic, I want to put this out here because we're, you know, getting near years in, start of 2023. Today's podcast is titled 525,600 minutes, build to order. 525,600 minutes equals the number of minutes in 1 year. So for me, I'm going to start living my life minute by minute and try to make the most out of each and every one of those minutes. And then build to order. That's our business model. To end this year and to start off rolling to next year, build to order, which is, I consider, a very efficient way to manufacture a product, build it to order, which includes pre-ordering. That's all in there, but I like the business model, particularly for what we're doing. So anyway, we can talk about anything. If you guys don't want to talk about anything, you know, we'll just cut off. I mean, knock off early today, which is, we too gonna knock off this early. But what do you want? What's trending topics? What's in the news? One topic we'll discuss one day. There have been about 600 municipalities in this country, either municipal towns or counties, that have declared bankruptcy over the years. So we're gonna say that for another day. But if you wanna start that topic, we can start off today. Or this case out of Mexico where, you know, the young lady was killed down there. She went down there with about a group of five or six friends, and on the second day she was allegedly murdered by some of those so-called friends. So I don't know where that case is right now. That's sort of a trending topic, one of the trending topics out there, and whatever else that you guys might want to talk about. But if nothing at all, we can, we'll knock off early. 619-768-2945. Press 1 if you guys want to talk about anything. Other than that, we'll go to the Rural Energy Foundation. If nothing after that, we're going to knock off early.
People who live in towns and cities in Uganda and many other African countries have some access to grid electricity to light their homes and power their businesses. But many rural people aren't connected at all. But simply waiting for the grid to arrive isn't good enough for entrepreneurs like Moses Akera. He recognizes there's a good business to be made harnessing the power of the sun.
I really prefer solar to be used in the community like this, because it remains the property of the client. You don't pay bills and you don't buy fuel like somebody using generator.
So solar energy is the best option for many rural Ugandans. But being new to the industry, many solar retailers like Moses were struggling to make their businesses a success.
We don't have capacity to advertise ourselves, our products. We don't have capacity to have quality technical training.
Though the Rural Energy Foundation, a not-for-profit organization, introduced the Solar Now program in 2007. Its aim, to spread the benefits of electricity throughout rural Africa by providing training and support to existing solar retailers like Moses. And they encourage other retailers and entrepreneurs to start selling solar equipment from scratch.
Most of these retailers need to be supported in terms of training so that they can be able to run their businesses better. They also need support in terms of market awareness because so many people out here in the field do not know about solar, so we need to come and enlighten them.
As well as training, the Rural Energy Foundation loans retailers portable demonstration kits, which they use to drum up business in local markets.
What we're trying to do is these people are off-grid and they do not have access to electricity. So we're trying to show them how solar can improve their lives. For instance, we'll try to show them how they can make money from solar. For instance, here with us we have a shaver, so they can use this to have barbershops. We also show them how they can use it to use light at their homes. See, when you have this light in your house, the children can study at night. They can use it in their shops to work longer hours, and they can use it at home.
If retailers want to use the Solar Now brand, they have to commit to providing high-quality installations and good after-sales service. The Rural Energy Foundation helps them achieve this by training solar technicians.
We're trying to get the entrepreneurs to sign service contracts, so when they sell the product, it also comes with after-sales service. Let's say they have to check to make a phone call to the customer after a certain period to check if the system is working, and then till after some time through the service contract, they also have to go and actually do the inspection of the system.
The Rural Energy Foundation has trained over 200 retailers in 9 African countries. So far, they've sold 57,000 solar home systems and 36,000 solar lanterns. They've helped at least 400,000 people, saved nearly 5 million litres of kerosene and 12,000 tonnes of CO2 each year. Basil Okelo is impressed and has decided to buy the equipment from Moses to set up his own solar barbershop and phone charging business. He's taking advantage of a credit scheme which helps entrepreneurs buy equipment from Solar Now retailers to get their businesses going.
Solar Now is giving me a loan. I'm going to make a down payment of 25% now. Later, in 3 months' time, I'll make another 25%, making a total of 50%. Then the remaining I'll complete within a period of a year.
With his system now installed, Basil is optimistic about the future.
Because this is a new investment I'm going into. I have never been into this business before. But as I see, I have the expectation that I'll make money.
Moses is growing his solar retail business too. He already had a shop in town. With support from the Rural Energy Foundation, he's now set up a small village branch to cater specifically for his rural customers.
Rural Energy Foundation is very important to us. If they help us training technician, we shall be in position to expand all over.
We hope that others will also adopt the private sector development approach. We don't want to be unique. We want to spread the word that this is a really efficient approach to get the technology diffused deeply into the rural markets.
The Rural Energy Foundation plans to expand into other African countries and broaden its range of sustainable technologies. Solar panels are now becoming a common sight here on homes, and shops buy them as well to run radios and offer phone charging, increasing their income and enabling people to communicate. And to everyone's delight, the local bar has installed a fridge powered by the sun. The owner is pleased with his investment.
Yeah, we're happy. Of course, it's cold. The beer tastes better. And so I get more customers.
Okay, we're still here. Anyway, today's jump off topic, and like I say, it's open mic today. we have on our scrolling marquee on Blog Talk, 525, 600 minutes build to order. 525,600, that's the number of minutes in 1 year. There are 1,440 minutes in a day. Toyota builds or assembles 30 cars per minute. 30 cars per minute. They take 30, and on average, an average Toyota truck or car, you know, give or take, there's about 30,000 parts to a, you know, the typical, let's say, as a, you know, conglomerate Toyota truck or car. And in 1,000 minutes in a day. So, but in 60 seconds, oh, excuse me, not 60 seconds. No, 60 seconds, 1 minute, they're able to, I mean, because one car, okay, is, they do 19.9 cars per minute. Let's just round that out to 20 cars per minute. And, let's bring it down to 19. 19 cars per minute times 30,000 parts per car. Man, that 570,000 parts that are assembled into 19 cars per minute. They know how to manufacture. And I think they call it lean manufacturing. Also, you can call it build to order. So that's the business model that we're going to implement with what we do. Build to order. A lot of people build it and then, you know, they have it as inventory. But no, we're not going to keep a stock of inventory. You know, we're going to build to order. We place order, we'll build it. And we're working on logistically so you can see us build it in real time through daily live streams. All right. But anyway, 500 and, like I say, the 525,600 minutes in a year. And the official business model for It's My House is we're using the build-to-order model, business model, and of manufacturing, so, or assembling, really. That more accurately will be assembling. But more on that on a weekly basis, particularly as we line up our daily live stream so you can see us, you know, make stuff. And hopefully some of you will be participating in that. Now, another topic that, before I go to the phone lines here, and we'll go into detail at another date, but there have been, and I just didn't have enough time to prepare properly for today's thing, but there have been in a neighborhood of 600 municipal bankruptcy filings here in the United States over the years. Now, when I talk about a municipal bankruptcy, I'm talking about municipalities. Now, a municipality could be a town, it can be a city, and there are legal distinctions between the town and the city. But we'll get in that another day. But A municipality could be a town, an incorporated town, an incorporated city, or an incorporated county. There have been in the neighborhood of 600 bankruptcies of various towns, cities, and counties here in the United States. And before I go to the phone lines here, let me rattle off some of them to you. Let's see. Bankruptcies. Okay. All right. In 2021, now this is 2021. In 2021, four municipal authorities in the United States filed for bankruptcy under Chapter 9 of the United States Bankruptcy Code. The same for the previous year. The number of Chapter 9 bankruptcy filings peaked in 2012 when there were 20 filings. This is 20 cities, towns, and or counties that filed for bankruptcy. But let's see. Let me get a list for you. Oh, here we go. Okay, bankrupt cities. And I'm putting this out there as a follow-up from yesterday. If you are homeless or struggling or facing some type of financial strife, particularly with the roof over your head, you might not want to live in a city that has declared bankruptcy or on its way to bankruptcy. Okay. Particularly if it's on its way to bankruptcy. But anyway, I'm looking at a map here. Let's see. Okay. Now this is not current. Well, I'm leaving you the list from January 1st, 2010. All right. Hillview, Kentucky, they filed Chapter 9 bankruptcy in that year. Also, Detroit, Michigan, which is probably one of the largest cities so far that has declared bankruptcy. The city of San Bernardino, California, had declared bankruptcy at one time. Mammoth Lake, California, at one time declared bankruptcy. The city of Stockton, California declared bankruptcy. And you know what? Now, if the city's declared bankruptcy, that's a pretty good indicator of, or barometer of, how many individual households declared bankruptcy. But that's what we're going to do an extensive series on this. All right, Jefferson County, Alabama. Now, Jefferson County, Alabama, in that year, they declared bankruptcy, the whole county. The city of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, I've passed through there a couple of times, that in 2010, they declared bankruptcy. The city of Central Falls, Rhode Island, declared bankruptcy. Now, here's one surprise to me. I got a friend that lives in this county. Boise County, Idaho, declared bankruptcy. Now, this is going back to, I think, 2010. But all total, in my research from yesterday, you've got about, there have been, over the years, maybe about 600 towns or counties, all with municipal charters, that, for one reason or another, had to declare bankruptcy. And that is a barometer of, because, the cities are trying to, they're trying to make revenue from, whatever they got going on in that town. And, I'm surprised New York City hasn't gone bankrupt. Because they have a whole lot of giveaway programs up there. And social programs are expensive. But I don't know if they ever have in the past, but I had to do some homework on that. But anyway, that's for another day. Municipalities that have filed bankruptcy. But that's another reason why I say go rural. You know, what's the fiscal lookout for the city and or county that you are living in? Flint, Michigan, if they have never declared bankruptcy yet, they have some serious municipal problems there. But anyway, all right, let me find my way back to the studio here. And like I said, we'll go more. Oh, on our scrolling marquee on Blog Talk here on Blog Talk, the platform, I have some, the build to order model, which is, I guess some people might call it the Toyota way. Well, it's sort of like pre-order. Now, of course, they have a more I wouldn't call it complex, more elaborate system because they have showrooms and distributors and dealerships and all that type of thing. But build to order, because some people build and then sock it away in inventory in a warehouse, but build to order is just like it says, you build based on an order. So you don't need to store it in a warehouse and incur a larger expense. But anyway, we'll cover that maybe tomorrow. Anyway, 309 area code, your mic is open. Open mic, anything you want to talk about. Okay, he might have stepped away. Let's go to 703 area code, your mic is open. And he might have stepped away.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm here. How are you doing?
Oh, okay. Fine.
Yeah,
so
the build-to-order is interesting.
Oh, yeah, I was looking at various models. I like the build-to-order.
Yeah, I think it's also called just-in-time manufacturing is another term for
exactly.
That.
Exactly. It's called that
and
also.
Dell Computers patented that concept and made more money from that patent than all the computers it ever sold. Just as a side note.
Well, now with Dell Computers, because I'm looking at it from a retail aspect. If I go into a retail store and buy a Dell computer, I mean, Best Buy. If I go on Best Buy, it's already on
the
shelf.
They patented the concept of. Well, yeah, it's similar, where stores will buy, they'll pre-order, but the concept was that you could go online and configure your computer, and they would build it to that configuration so that they didn't have to carry
inventory.
But, of course, stores like Best Buy, whatever, they'll just buy a certain amount of one model, a certain amount of another model. But those are still, in essence, built to order. They're just kind of like pre-ordered and then put on a shelf, stocked as inventory within the retail stores. But as far as Dell's concerned, it's still built to order. They license that to all, pretty much all computer places now. You can go online and say what kind of processor you want and what kind of this you want, kind of like a menu. And then
right.
You hit buy, and they build it and ship it to you. Based on the configuration that you requested.
Right.
Which could work with the greenhouses and tiny homes as well, because there's going to be options, right, like solar, not solar, aquaponics, not aquaponics, that sort of menu.
Well, I think that would be a – because, number one, you can – But the build to order, well, like I said, it's like another way of saying pre-order. You're getting any money that you need up front, you know, to build it, and then I guess ship it as well, unless somebody's going to have a, you know, a local pickup. And basically, I believe that's how Jeff Bezos started with Amazon.
Yeah, makes
sense. People would order the book, and he'd go get the book and then ship it off. Then he just expanded to, you know, what he was doing. But he started off, it's amazing this guy started off in the garage. But so did Steve Jobs and Wozniak, a garage. So Michael Dell, I believe, he started off in his college dorm room.
I mean, I started in my backyard.
Yeah, well, you might be the next billionaire from the backyard. It's another guy I'd like to get him on this program. Steve Shives, he started off in his backyard. He wasn't even really trying to start a business. It's just he tried to get rid of a piece of scrap metal that the junkyard wouldn't take it, so he turned it into a camper. So like not a teardrop camper, but something in that mode, called Runaway Campers. That's the name of his company, Runaway Campers, and runawaycampers.com. And put it on eBay, and it sold, and somebody said, you got another one? And they sold in another one, and he said, you know what, let me keep on making these. And he turned that into a multi-million dollar business. So right out of his backyard.
Yeah. You know, that I could do that with a carport, I guess. You know, just since I got all the pictures and everything, put it on eBay, right?
Right.
And then just let people know what the lead time, because, you know, you got to order all the materials and everything. And, of course, you would put the bare minimum, right? You could sell the other stuff sort of as add-ons. So, for example, for my carport, it would be all the components, you know, that make up the greenhouse, except, say, for the media and the fish and you know, this, you know, whatever else goes into it. And that could be sold on eBay because it's all stuff that could be shipped from various locations. And then for the media and everything else, you could have it as add-ons, you know, if you want, you know, because people might want to use different media or they might want to have their own, you know, because you can put different things in an aquaponic system, like you can put river stones or coco core or, you know, expanded clay. And, you know, they all have various costs. So you could keep that as sort of the add-on, but just the basic structure itself, you know, everything without the fish and without the media could be a kit. Interesting. So I could do that right now.
Well, I may as well try it. There's a lot of, you know.
The prepper market.
I think that's a good idea.
Put
something on eBay.
Yeah. I hadn't thought of that until you just mentioned it right now, literally.
Yeah, well, like
I've
said, this guy's been charged. He didn't intend on it, but he was building these things out of the backyard. And the only reason why he moved to a bigger facility, with a warehouse or whatever, is because one of his neighbors called, code enforcement on him or something like that, like somebody. And so he had to move operation from the backyard, to a proper industrial thing, but. He made quite a bit of money right out of his backyard.
Well, you know, I think with my system, it's actually easier because what I would do is I wouldn't, you know, it doesn't make sense to build. They can't be built and shipped. That makes no sense at all because they're too big and you'd have to assemble it and everything. The way it would work with what I've done is basically I would sell them the kit and then the instructional videos that showed how I built it. And then, of course, I could be available to answer questions during the build. And, you know, the nice thing about that is people would be able to customize it themselves however they want, you know, because some people have some good carpentry skills more than I do, and they could make them even better looking. And that would build a community, too, at the same time for the hot, you know, that would prove the concept that would then fund the bigger commercial ones, you know, ones that are architecturally designed in your backyard. That's very interesting, LA.
Well, I say go for it.
I mean, what do you got to lose, right? You put it on eBay, and then I got pictures and content. And you know, like you said, since I've already got a YouTube channel, I could show people, you know, how it's built. You know, after they buy it, I could go with them with the videos and explain, well, this is how you do this part, this is how you do this part. And it's not very, you know, for me, it's not complex. I guess some people will find it complex. But, you know, it's just basically putting stuff together, like the carport, you know, I don't know if you've seen those 10 by 20 carports. They just get assembled with tubes, you know, that interconnect to each other, and you end up with an A-frame, right?
Right.
And then, you know, what I ended up doing was I wanted to anchor the A-frame because I didn't want to do a foundation, so I didn't have to pull permits and that kind of stuff. So what I did is I anchored it to the ground using some shelving units that have one-inch holes on the four corners. So what I did is I took a shelving unit per corner, right, and then I filled in all the middle parts. So now you've got a carport anchored down by a bunch of shelving units. Of course, that's not going to keep it on the ground. So then what you do next is you put pea gravel all over the shelving unit, right, and it falls in between the cracks of the shelving units, which is you're just using the one shelf, you know, you're using it as a floor. So now you've got a frame that's weighted down and attached, well, not attached, but is just sitting there on your lawn, right, weighted down. And then the next step would be to take the one-inch PVC, which, you know, we could ship the, you know, I think for what I'm doing, since it was sort of, you know, do it yourself, you know, I actually cut all the PVC pieces myself, you know, and made the tees and all that stuff, which, you know, wasn't difficult to do, but some people may have difficulty with that. But maybe that could be a pre-sold, you know, a pre-packaged bag of, you know, plastic tees that are cut the right way. Because that's what I did is I took, you know, how in PVC you have your tees, your elbows, and your connectors. You know, so a connector can be used to extend the tube. A T can be used to add a support member. And an elbow can be used to connect the corner, right? And they also make ones with three, you know, so you can connect three points to one, you know, to one location. I didn't have to do that because the frame already had those on the corners. That's how the frame worked, you know, on the corners it had the three joints, you know, where each tube goes into one of the holes for that. But since on mine I was just extending things, all I needed to do was to take, use the circular extenders that connect two PVC tubes together, you know, to extend a tube. And then I would also use the T's. Oh, yeah, that's right. I did use the crosses also because the crosses can be used to, you know, you've seen the PVC crosses, right, that connect four pieces of tube together like a cross. Yeah, so those were all the components I used plus PVC. Right. And then for the PVC, I had 1-inch, 1/2-inch and 4-inch PVC. So that's your frame, right? The frame is the 1-inch PVC, the 1/2-inch and the 4-inch is when you start building the aquaponics part of it. So then once you get your frame built, you know, now you've got someplace to attach the polycarbonate panels to, and the ThermoShield panels to, which are the insulation. So if you can picture that, and you know, I've actually diagrammed it out on my Facebook, OU812 Aquaponics Facebook channel, and on the YouTube channel, I actually made videos and took pictures of the entire process because I wanted people to build these. You know, I didn't want to stop people from building things that could feed their families, but I did patent it, of course, so that that way, if we do it commercially, I have a way of protecting that. But yeah, once I extended the frame, I added the triple pane. Well, I added all the insulation, you know, north, south, east, west, and that was just two inch ThermoShield. And then I just taped it on with like Gorilla tape right onto the frame. So now you've got the frame, you know, weighted down on the ground, and you got your 2-inch ThermoShield bonded to the frame, and you've got a roof. You've got sidewalls, you can cut a door. And then once you add the triple pane polycarb on the south, all that's left is you need to put some vents on the lower south. And I made those out of 2-inch ThermoShield as well. So now you can picture the frame. It's got the ThermoShield, you know, cut and put inside of it and taped to the frame. And you take the roof. And you have a cutout panel on the roof, and you got another ThermoShield panel that sits on top like a flap. So, and on the bottom south, you do the same thing with some 1-inch by 4-foot flaps attached to the bottom frame, which is simple hinges that you could do many ways to do a hinge. So now you've got the lower south flaps, right, and the upper north flaps, and then glazing on the south. And then all you got to do is cut a door on the east or west side. I did mine on the west because the wind is predominantly coming from the east here where I live. So I put the door on the opposite side, you know, where it's protected, because I didn't want the door opening and closing all the time or bringing in a lot of drafts. So now you've got a fully insulated structure made from a carport and PVC. And you've used Gorilla tape on all the seams. Every place that ThermoShield touches metal, you put this Gorilla tape on it. And then the final thing, which was actually the secret sauce that I discovered later on, is now you can punch holes in the tape, and you can take that great stuff filler material that turns into styrofoam. And you just spray it on all the seams, every single place where metal touches ThermoShield, and tape. You put a hole in the tape and you squirt that stuff into it, and now you've got an integrated, it's a structure that's solid, because the ThermoShield is attached to the metal. The metal is weighted down on the ground by the racks. But it's still technically not attached, because you can still take it apart. I can physically go and cut all my panels out of the frame, take the frame apart, you know, take the shelving units off of it, and now it's completely apart. So it wouldn't be a permanent structure, which would get around some of the city ordinances that require you to have permits for permanent structures. So now you've got a greenhouse that will stay warm in the winter, and you haven't added the thermal component to it, but you have in a sense, because the floor being all pea gravel, that it acts as a thermal battery. Everything you put in it acts as a thermal battery, and a thermal battery is something that stores heat, like, you know, a stone, like you touch the side of a building, right, during the middle of the day, you know, it gets really, really hot, and it takes a long time for that heat to dissipate, you know, because the heat is stored in the stone. Well, the same thing with the aquaponics greenhouse that I built. Since I've got a fish tank in there with 300 gallons of water, I've got 6 totes with 30 gallons of media in it, and they're black. And you know, all the gravel, pea gravel in there, that all acts as a heat sink to capture the solar energy. So just with that design, you know, even without a water wall, which is something I haven't added to my greenhouse, and if I did, it would make it operate even better. You know, right now with all the leaks and holes and everything that are in it, because I did it very, very quickly, you know, it doesn't function as efficiently as it could. But if you built it, you know, nicely, and so that everything, you know, closes properly and makes a tight, you know, what you want is you want an airtight structure. So when all the vents are closed, right, and everything is closed, it's airtight. And what happens when you put an airtight structure that's insulated in the middle of the sun with sun shining through the window? Well, that's a car. And if you ever notice, your car gets really, really, really hot even when it's minus 10 degrees outside because of the greenhouse effect. All that solar energy gets captured inside of the car, and your seats and everything, you know, act as a heat sink. And now your car will get 100 degrees even though there's 5 feet of snow outside. So that's the basic concept of a passive solar design, and that's not patentable. You know, anybody can build that because the Chinese invented that concept of having a fully insulated structure. And then the additional thing they would do. So let's, you know, picture that, right? By the way, you don't have to picture this because you can go to OU812 Aquaponics and see the version I have in my backyard. So you don't even have to picture it in your mind. But if you could picture, you know, this greenhouse with a thermoshield, the additional thing that I would do that I did not do is I would add siding, white colored siding on all the east, west, north, on everything basically. And on the roof, of course, you would want to put some sort of, you could put siding also, really, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And ideally, you want it to be white so that it reflects all the energy, right? So it's an insulated box because now it's reflecting all solar energy. So that means it's insulated. If it didn't reflect, it would be an oven, right? Yeah, that's the difference between an oven. You know, why are coolers white? Like if you look at an insulated cooler, why are they painted white, not black?
No, why
do
you check?
Well, because black traps heat. White, you know, expels heat. So ideally, you want the greenhouse white. In fact, ideally, we want all houses and all buildings and everything we build on Earth white colored or light colored so that it's reflecting heat and not storing heat. This is the reason why, you know, cities get extremely hot. You've got all that concrete, all that asphalt, all that sidewalk, all that bricks, everything is acting as a heat sink. And if you've ever walked around a city like at noon, and compare that to walking in a park under trees, that's what we're talking about. The difference between walking, you know, on grass under trees versus walking in a city where there's sidewalk and asphalt and all that stuff. And by the way, this is a way to environmentally address global warming without really, you know, a low tech way of doing it. You know, by changing the color of your house, you will save on energy costs. So anyways, you've got this white structure. Now it's sealed, you know, it's sealed and it's protected with siding. You can buy just, you know, inexpensive plastic siding. And then finally, you need some vent openers for the lower south and the upper north. And these are little components you can buy. They don't use electricity. They're wax-filled cylinders that open and close a piston. And that piston is attached to a lever that can open and close a greenhouse window. They're called greenhouse vent openers, automatic vent openers. And they have a little knob on them that you can set the temperature on when you want it to open, when you want it to close. So now picture this. Now you've got a greenhouse that can regulate its temperature because when it gets too hot, the vents start opening. When it gets too cold, the vents start closing. So now you have a greenhouse that can control its temperature without any electricity. And then once you start adding stuff into it, like a fish tank, or, and really you could put anything in it at that point, the Chinese were putting, you know, they would dig a hole in the side of the mountain covered in plastic. That's your insulated box plus your glazing, right? For venting, they would just open and close the plastic by hand. They would roll it up and roll it down to let air into the structure. And then for thermal battery, they would stick a bunch of 55-gallon barrels filled with water in the back of the hole. So when all that solar energy, when the sun is really low in the sky and all that solar energy came into that hole, it would shine upon the barrels filled with water, and that heat energy would be stored in the barrels of water. And then at night, because, you know, heat escapes, right? Heat heat moves to the path of least resistance. You know, that's why when you put something hot next to something cold, eventually it reaches an equilibrium, right? Hot goes to the cold, you know, the cold gets hotter, the hot gets colder, and eventually it reaches an equilibrium temperature where both things are the same temperature. So the thermal battery, you know, during the day, it's storing all that heat energy, right? And during the day, you've got the sun, right? At night, we have a problem, you know, because now all that stored energy is going to leave through the glazing. The glazing has the least amount of insulation. In fact, if you could make the glazing like, you know, let's say 30-pane polycarbonate panel, which would be very expensive, you know, now you would have a glazing that is as insulated as the rest of it, and you wouldn't have to cover it with a blanket. But the Chinese in the middle of the night would roll down a blanket, cover the plastic, and now all that energy stored in the water barrels is released into the inside of the greenhouse. And they were able to keep the greenhouse at 70 degrees with 4 feet of snow outside. That's called a passive solar design. Earthship design is another term for it. That's all well known, you know, hundreds of years old. What I did for the patent was I added an evaporative cooling system. In other words, instead of putting the water wall all the way in the back of the hole, right? I put the water wall right in the middle of the greenhouse, right? And mine's not a hole. Mm-hmm. It's an external structure. So now you've got a big wall of water painted black that now is the thermal battery for the greenhouse. And now if you put an evaporative cooling system over the thermal wall, now you have a house that not only can stay 70 degrees, but now you can control the temperature and humidity, because that's what an evaporative cooler does. For anybody that's lived in the high desert, which I did, you know, everything in life sort of leads you to inventions, you know. So, I mean, all these little bits and pieces of experience is what led me to design this thing, because, you know, when I was sitting there in the greenhouse and it was really hot, I was like, wait, I remember in Lancaster we used to do evaporative cooling, and that's a way, you know, that's a way to cool it. And I had looked at a patent that had a concept of having a secondary roof in a greenhouse with an evaporative cooling system in there. And that's when the light bulb went off and I said, whoa, I could put an evaporative cooler over the water wall, and now you would have a structure that cycles hot and cold air, dry and moist air, and light, you know, and now because of that, that's what enabled me to grow the mushrooms in the back part of the greenhouse. And that's what I think is going to make, well, not I think, I know this is what makes these greenhouses commercially viable, because they weren't used before in commercial architecture because of the fact that half of the greenhouse is dark, right? That's how the system works. You want half the greenhouse dark because that's where you put your thermal battery. And thermal batteries store both heat and cold. So during the winter time, it's storing solar energy in the form of heat that it releases to keep the thing warm in the winter, right? In the summertime, when the sun is very high up in the sky, it's storing the cold energy. And now it's storing the cold energy, so now it's keeping the greenhouse cool in the summertime. And then the vents are the final component that controls the temperature within it. Because otherwise it would get, you know, if you had a sealed box with a thermal battery in the middle of the sun, it would get like, it would melt. You know, it would get up into the 250 degrees probably or more. So that's why you need the venting, is to, you know, to let that heat out, to maintain the temperature. So yeah, that's the Earthship. That's the you know, that's called an Earthship. It's called the passive solar greenhouse. It's called the Chinese solar greenhouse. What I did is I invented the concept of putting the evaporative cooler over the water wall, so that now you can also control humidity, which is needed to grow mushrooms. You see how it all comes together, right? Now with that evaporative cooling system, I can grow mushrooms all year round, 24/7. So once you have the mushrooms growing, you add fish and plants, and now you've got fish, plants, and mushrooms, and now you have a way of living in a structure all year round that feeds you. And that's the invention that I patented.
Okay. Hey, Chris, you mentioned something?
Yeah. All right. You know, we're looking at the topic today. You know, 500 something thousand minutes in a year. And then we went to, you know, talking about the assembly line of how many cars they build and how many components are on there. So I was kind of just sitting here in a dissection mode in my head that how many parts are in the greenhouse versus an automobile that gets put together per minute.
Good question.
And how many And how many people does it take to assemble them 30,000 parts per minute? And the division would come down as is, I know that if I'm looking at framing a wall, I'm basically going to have 6 to 8 studs in that wall. I'm going to have a track on top and a track on bottom. If I have any windows, then I'm going to have some little jack studs, and I'm going to have some headers that are going to have to be put in. But if it's just a framed wall, and that's an interior wall, because mainly a lot of them don't have necessarily doors and windows in them, you're about half. So half your walls will have a door and window in them. Other half won't have anything in them. So if I'm looking at construction-wise, you know, how many people would it take if I was looking at a wall that had 8 studs and had to have 16 screws put in it on one side, and then it's going to have 16 screws put on the other side, so it's 32 screws. I think that 4 people could screw that together in 1 minute, maybe 2. I don't think you'd want to put more than 4 people working any closer than that together. I don't think they need to be. But if 4 people were framing a wall in 2 minutes instead of 1 minute, this would come down to what we can produce. Because I can produce, just out of one machine, 15 studs a minute. So that means I can put 8 people to work per minute, and I would outrun them with material. I would produce double the material they can handle. Now, you know, one thing about, you know, the human being, they're not going to work as efficient as that machine. So I'm going to say that it's probably going to average out to a 3-minute wall, because I'd rather figure it long than figure it short. But, you know, if we're looking at the front wall, and that thing's only 3 foot tall, and then it starts the glazing wall running back at an angle, that's just a knee wall. So it doesn't matter if that wall is 8 foot long or if it's 2 foot long, it still has to have the same amount of fasteners. So that's something that everybody needs to understand. You can frame a 10-foot wall, a 12-foot wall, a 14-foot, a 16-foot wall in the same amount of time as you frame an 8-foot wall, a 2-foot wall. It doesn't matter. So size really don't matter. It comes to when you stand it up and being able to reach it. So anytime you start going over 8 feet, you're going to have to get something to reach it. 8 foot, you're still going to reach up. I'm 3 inches short of it. Now, L.A., he's 6'7". He's going to reach up and grab that ceiling, and I'm not even going to have to hesitate. I know he can reach it. So, you know, it comes down to working out what you're trying to do, but also what could we do? How many could we frame? You know, I'm not messing with my calculator right now because I'm talking, but I thought about playing with it for a minute and coming right back to it, and I could give you a few answers on how many walls we can put together. We know that at least four walls builds a tiny house.
Right.
Now, I would say six walls, so that way we've got something for an L-shaped bathroom. But that'd be the only divider wall in there. But we want to divide the bathroom, right? We want to close it off. So I think I had even sent you some layouts, L.A.
Yeah, you did. You did. I got them yesterday.
And those layouts are under your square footage of what you were looking at from 400 down, 399 and down.
Right.
But, you know, they give a couple a perfect amount of room because they don't need more than that to survive. You know, we're talking about surviving here. And actually, you could live nicely. I mean, I like the comfortability of it. Now, that thing can also be, you can add a room to it very easily and make a separate bedroom in there and make that bedroom your living room. So it could be two rooms
right.
instead of one. I just wanted to give you what we've drawn up and put in place so you can see it. But, you know, as far as the gentleman yesterday that came on and he said he wanted a 200 square footer, right there it is. So that's why, you know, I've been waiting to have the conversation with him. I didn't get his phone number yesterday, but he didn't call me either. So if, you know, if he's looking at that, he needs to see those. I was hoping he would send it so that way I could just share the pictures over to him and say, well, what do you think of that? Because it's all
right,
I went
well,
for, no
I,
loft to it or anything.
I think we can, in Clubhouse or with phone calls or whatever, if figure like with Carlos's or any of these projects, how many parts, how quick could it be put together, what kind of manpower, because we don't have robots helping us right now, but I'm pretty sure a carport doesn't have 30,000 parts. So and what's his name, Randy Jones, he does – you mentioned a couple of weeks ago, he does like 3 to 5 houses a day, tiny houses. And I think he's got a crew of 35. So that's about 70 people per house.
No, he's got 70 people working.
70 people working? Okay.
Yep, and he said 4 to 5 is what he told me the other day. So
now, how many people per house? I guess for the assembly of the house.
For the assembly of the house, I'm saying he has about 11 or 12 working on each of the sections.
Okay. And he started off just by doing just one.
It would be super easy. Yeah, like you were putting the siding and the roof on. You could easily
right.
have 12 people standing around that house. 2 on this wall, 2 on that wall, 2 on this one, 2 on that one, and 2 on the roof. You know, very easily
right.
have 8 people right there and somebody cutting for each one of them if they need it.
Right.
And all they do is install. So, you know, in an hour's time, they got the wall done, they're out of there. You know, here it moves down to the next thing.
Well, I figure if an ad is placed on... It wouldn't be hard to get 100 orders. Now, that's the easy part. Okay. It's just having things together before you place that first order. Okay, how quickly can we, you know, assemble a carport or a tiny house, Because let's say you market using eBay. eBay, you know, I mean, you got, well, I guess Jones does this too. I guess anybody can do this. They can either pick it up from the location where you made it. Of course, now, if you're shipping something, depends on how big it is. The bigger and the heavier it is, the more expensive it is.
I think building it in place, you know, just thinking out loud for at least what I did in, you know, if I'm going to do the one that I did in my backyard, it doesn't make sense at all for me to build it in my backyard. What makes sense is to sell plans for it and materials for it and instructional videos on how to build it. That would be the lowest hanging fruit, because that way you save on ship. You know, you have the stuff. They can order it directly. You know, they can get the parts list, order it themselves, have it shipped to them themselves. And then you don't have the worry of, you know, when is it going to be ready? You know, in other words, you're selling them the kit. So that, you know, the idea, the blueprint, the videos, so that they can do it themselves. And this would be huge for the prepper market. I think the prepper market would jump all over this. I'm going to put it up on eBay today just to see what happens.
Right, that's an excellent idea. Now, all right, now, Carlos, all right, the kit, what would be, let's go with the carport. What would be included in the kit?
Well, the kit would include the shelving units, the carport, for the interior of it, I haven't thought about it yet. Yeah, you know, the design I did in my backyard is really not ready for just-in-time manufacturing like Chris is. And this is, by the way, why I was very interested with what Chris is doing. Since he builds his like an erector set, it's a much easier model, right? In other words, once we build the first erector set, including everything, you know, the water wall, the fish tank, everything, right?
Right.
That can be shipped as boxes, right? Just boxes of framing, of frames, basically, that you put together with nuts and bolts like an erector set. This is what I love about what Chris is doing, the fact that you build it like an erector set. Most kids have played with erector sets, so they'll know exactly what I'm talking about.
I know
about,
I
you
have.
Know?
Right.
Yeah, so now picture this, you know, I mean, and I know I'm diverting, but the way he's doing it is way more efficient, because it could be shipped as an erector set that you build, and now you've got a metal frame of everything you need. Then you would add your siding, your roof, your glazing, your vent openers. You would put in your pond liner inside of the pond. You would fill the water wall with water, you know, and then you would start putting material into your grow beds. And my system runs from air. You would hook up all the air pumps, you know, and now you would plug it in and add water to the fish tank. And now you're going to have you know, the system working on grid. But for the carport version, you know, they would do it the way I did it, but it would make sense to, you know, I would either have to further develop the product to have it as a real kit, you know, with all the tees and all the shelves, everything like pre-cut and pre-made, right? That's the way you could sell it as a product kit. But the lowest hanging fruit is just selling it as a DIY kit where they order everything and they use my brain and my videos in order to, you know, to make it in their backyard. And I think the prepper market would eat that up probably because, you know, they want to save money and they want to do it themselves, right? So they probably just want to buy a kit and my expertise rather than buying off-the-shelf parts. But then there's people, you know, there's the next level, right? The IKEA model where, you know, it gets shipped as a box of stuff with some instructions
that
are very
difficult. That's a popular model, the IKEA model.
So that would be the next
I
step
know
up from my
quite
DIY
a few
model.
Women, right. I know quite a few women that love IKEA and basically that's what they do. They sell you, it's a DIY project.
Yeah, I guess IKEA is a DIY project, isn't it? Because They send you everything you need to build it, and you do it yourself. Mine is one step removed from that, you know, with some additional, you know, well, you know, that's when you need the garage, right? In other words, you know,
right.
The way I'm talking
well,
about, I don't need a garage.
You know, I need to step aside. My ex-wife used to go to, she still does IKEA, but I got to go in. I've never stepped inside of one. I've just been in the parking lot of those, but because this came to me. I guess inside they have displays, and then, you know, you buy the kit and you name it, and it's, I guess you can say their stores are, I don't know what you call them, dealership store.
No,
everything's local.
Yeah, it's very similar to like a showroom, right? You walk into a showroom and they've got built cars, right?
Right.
And then, you know, you order your car and they've got a certain amount of inventory on the lot, right? But
right,
then if there's
right.
one that they don't have, they have to order it directly from the manufacturer, and you wait your 30, 40 days or whatever, and you come back to the lot and there's your car with all the specs that you wanted. Because as you know, they can't keep every possible combination of everything on the lot, right? So they have most
right.
of the popular model there ready to buy, right? But then for somebody that comes in and says, well, yeah, but I want tinted windows and this and that and this and that, you know, they're like, okay, we'll take your order. Come back in a month and your car will be here. Very similar model, which could be done with everything we're talking about. You know, eventually Chris and I could have a showroom, right, with here's a tiny home, here's a tiny greenhouse, here's a solar system, you know.
And actually, we've got an idea for that, and it's called a roadside attraction deal, okay? It's trying to think exactly what the word is that we use for this, but it has
– like a traveling road show?
Yeah.
Well, that's another idea.
You'll go into one of our, like a shipping container that we have sitting there. You'll go inside
right.
of it. You will be able to virtually design your house right there as you stop
right.
to get a hamburger and enjoy some music and stuff that's going on the stage. We are going to set up the stage and open it up to where there's something for people like along the highways there in Florida. There's some long highways in Florida. And we can set these up to where all the travelers that are coming through Florida can actually see these things, order these things, and get them shipped to their house. So
nice.
You don't have to buy it, take it back with you, and have it shipped to you.
So you can
and we'll
figure
have
it.
Financing
That's
and everything
brilliant.
Right on site. Huh?
So you can figure it on the site. You get the financing on the site. You put your down payment. It gets shipped. And then the other end of the payment gets done. That's brilliant, Chris.
Yeah, it'd be roadside model houses. That's what it's called. And
so
they can look at what we do have, and we can set them up with a very low inventory. We can show them with, like, one of them fully finished, but then all the rest of them under construction, so that way they can see how it's put together, so they can order the package to put together themselves, or they can have us assemble it for them and just bring it to them.
Okay.
And one thing, you said something about it, and I'm wondering. So the pictures I sent you yesterday, then the other floor plans, because the other floor plans aren't them floor plans. Because the other ones actually give you a complete bedroom inside that square.
Okay.
If we could take those floor plans and put them on eBay and sell them, as far as somebody ordering a package, I would like to set that up and do it. And I did today just get an online store. So we can put the houses on the online store, but it's also a store that has every item you'll ever want to buy. All you got to do is go to the store and buy it, and part of the money that's coming from that is going to charity. It is going to do this program. So it was a way to fund it. But I met a guy today that he just gave me a free store. So we don't have to pay for inventory. We just, it's more of a drop ship situation, but they can order Nikes. The, you know, right now, one of the trendy things, Nike Air, they're $140, but you can order them and you can't get them in the store. So, this is a, you know, an opportunity that, that we just came across today. So I haven't had a chance to share it. So I just did. I did sign up though for it this morning, but now we need to build the store.
Sounds like a plan.
And you'll be able, because I'm going to get it hooked up to where the store is on the app that we have, so that way you'll get cash back for everything that you're buying on the store.
Hmm.
You know, everything we've talked about today is I think it's been one of the most important days that I've participated on, you know, of course, from my own point of view, which is trying to raise the money for the patent filings for the houses, buildings, and skyscrapers that is due the 22nd. You know, I started the GoFundMe. I think in parallel with the GoFundMe, today I'm going to start an eBay store that's linked to my OU812 Aquaponics channel, because that will give me a way of proving that it's not snake oil. You know, people will go to the channel, they will see me growing fish plants and mushrooms for 11 years, right? And then so the eBay channel will have a link to the YouTube channel, and I'll just start taking pre-orders and you know, and have a special deal for the people that help me right now, because they would be helping me. You know, they would be helping a much bigger cause, which, of course, my mission is to build tiny homes that feed and house homeless vets, which is my, you know, my very specific mission. And of course, that's why what Chris is doing is super interesting to me, because his manufacturing can be used for the mission that I'm on. And for people that just want to DIY it right now, I could just start doing, you know, in other words, while we're getting the other model ready, you know, the IKEA model, let's call it the IKEA model, right? Because with Chris's technology, we could have an IKEA type model where we just ship them the frames, everything's pre-cut, all the materials, and they assemble it, right? This is sort of like the lowest level model, like do it yourself. This is as cheap as you can possibly go, but it's going to require labor, you know, which isn't cheap, but some people have, I always say, some people have more time than money, or more money than time. You know, for people that have more money than time, they're going to buy it assembled or pre-assembled or built to order. For the people that have more time than money, they're going to want to do probably something like I did, you know, in their backyard, perhaps.
Now, there's a big DIY market out there, and there's a huge market out there, and there's also the turnkey people, which might be the largest market, but DIY is considerably big. Because I look at IKEA people, especially DIY people.
Yeah, they are. But, you know, the interesting thing, L.A., is because of Clubhouse, right, I've already got my instructional videos done, because I had rooms where I taught people. It's called DIY Greenhouse for Growing Fish Plants and Mushrooms, you know, recorded. So I literally have the presentation and the voice recording that explains exactly how to build these. So I've already got, quote, the instructional video can be done super, super quickly just by taking that content and packaging it, you know, into a product. And now I've got something that could be immediately sold on eBay. And if they order everything themselves.
I bought and sold mostly. I used to sell houses on eBay, and then I bought some land off eBay, and so eBay is good. The only thing, now I haven't used eBay in a while. I haven't bought anything off eBay in probably about 4 or 5 years now. But when I used to auction houses on eBay, Well, so, yeah, Facebook marketplace is real good. Facebook Marketplace.
Yeah, that's another place. And you would want to put it in as many places as possible. You know, eBay's, Facebook Marketplaces.
Well, eBay, you know, Facebook Marketplace, what do you call it, Craigslist. You also have OfferUp. I haven't used OfferUp yet.
Amazon.
I just had OfferUp, but I haven't used it yet.
Don't forget Amazon.
But, yeah, Amazon might. Now, I don't know much about it. I've bought plenty of stuff off of Amazon. I haven't sold any, but they've got a lot of eyeballs on Amazon now.
How come?
Now, what I like about Facebook, you can do a Facebook Live and sell stuff that way. Or if you use YardStream, YardStream will allow you to connect to, like, I think 6 different platforms simultaneously.
Yard, what's that called?
Including YouTube.
Yard.
YardStream. YardStream.
YardStream. I'm gonna write that down.
Yeah. YardStream is. That's a pretty good platform.
You may have just saved my patent project, guys.
Well, I'm looking at it. If you take, like, say, the easy part, at least the way I look at it, is getting the order. The main thing is, all right, once you get the order, you just have to have a system in place for fulfillment to make sure they get the order. Now, with IKEA, people just walk into a local place. And I'm going to be looking, you know, I'm going to take a look at IKEA's map today, because
there's even the lower hanging fruit, right? IKEA is one step up from selling plans, blueprints. And that's
true.
Basically what I'm doing, you know, what I'll be doing on eBay. You know, I'm not have time between now and December 22nd to come up with, prepackaged stuff that I can ship to people. What I can offer people right now, this second, is the know-how of how to build it in their backyard, right?
Right.
You know, these are the materials you're going to need. This is how you're going to, you know, watch these videos. This is how it's going to come together. You know, that's what I can sell right now at the moment. And then it's on them to order everything and to actually go and build it. And it's an interesting model, because at that point it's pure digital. You don't have any inventory. The only inventory are the plans and the videos. And of course you could sell consultation services. You know, if you have a question, you know, it'll, you know, for, you know, for a package of $500 or whatever, you can get, you know, 10 hours of phone time with me or whatever. Now, you know, for the people that are listening right now, you know, the people that helped me with this problem, you know, I will help them, because, by the way, that is my mission. My mission is to teach people how to build these in their backyard. People that don't have the means to buy them, right? That's my real mission. The commercial stuff is just, you know, how I'm going to fund the mission, you know, by selling, you know, commercial versions or whatever, you know, partnering with Chris and all that kind of stuff with all these other partners we have, you know. That's how the intellectual property is going to get commercialized, but the mission is still the mission. You know, the commercialization is going to allow, is going to fund the mission, basically.
Now, you're setting up, you're going to set up the eBay store, I guess, if not today, this week?
I'm setting it up today, brother. I don't mess around.
Okay.
Like, you know,
you get that set up today, and then tomorrow, well, you know, we'll spend a couple hours promoting that, and then, the ordering, getting the order, at least the way I see it, is the easy part. It's just the fulfillment. But you seem like you got everything in order.
This cuts out the fulfillment portion. The fulfillment is on them. You know,
right?
In
exactly.
Other words,
exactly.
You're just selling the idea. You know, you're selling
right.
you're selling the know-how. you know, which is the lowest hanging fruit, by the way, in any project, right? There's know-how,
right.
There's kits, there's production, there's showroom, there's mass manufacturing, if you're going up the scale, right?
Right.
But know-how is the lowest hanging fruit. That's why, you know, people don't understand intellectual property. I'm a patent attorney. You know, getting a patent and selling it is the lowest hanging fruit. Like, for example,
okay.
Let's say if you invented a jet, which I could, you know, I could invent a jet or, I'm a rocket scientist. So, yes, I could invent a new type of jet. You know, it's in my capability. How do I start building and selling jet? I don't.
Right.
The barrier to entry is, you know, infinite relative to me. However, I could sell the schematics for the jet to Boeing
right.
and to Raytheon and to General Dynamics, et cetera. So that is the lowest hanging fruit is an invention that's patented. The lowest hanging fruit. The problem is you need a prototype, right? But I've got
right.
a prototype. So you know, I'm really sort of ahead of the curve in the sense that I've got the IP protection, but I've also got a working prototype. So now it's not like, you know, will it work? It's yes, if you do it the way I did it, it will work the way mine works, right? And I've got
right.
videos to prove it for people that think, you know, it's snake oil or whatever. Well, they can go on my YouTube channel and they can see 11 years worth of videos of me growing fish, plants, and mushrooms. In fact, I just did a
right.
video. I'm trying to do videos like every day or every other day. Just real short ones where I go in the greenhouse and say, hey, here's my fish. Here's the plants. You know, please like and subscribe, you know. But now that what's interesting, you know, I always say that life prepares you for life, right? I never intended to monetize that YouTube channel. It was not my intent. My intent was to give out the information so that people could feed themselves. But now I see that it's also a way for me to fund the mission that I'm on and that Chris is on, is to feed and house the homeless, especially homeless vets, that now all of this is coming together in fulfilling the mission, you know. So every single person
like
that orders kits on eBay is going to be helping me towards that mission. And that's what
right.
I want to be
I like
clear
the
about
stages
is that,
that,
that
you
know, it's not the money.
I like the stages that you brought up from the lowest hanging fruit. Cause I guess, like I said, the instructions, I guess you can go like IKEA people. They go to IKEA and they buy like I don't know.
They,
I have my
DCLs. They buy a pre-built kit. They buy a pre-cut kit. It's similar to a model, right? When you buy if you buy, say, you know, I used to build models, by the way, as a kid. Well, what do you get? You get a box of parts, and you have your X-Acto knife. And you got your glue, right? And
right.
now you build your car or your greenhouse or whatever you want, you know, which is another interesting thing that just based on what we just that thought, I could make plastic models of these for kids to build so they can start learning about passive solar design, you know. They could put a little goldfish
right.
in there, fill the water wall, you know, put it in the sun, you know, measure temperature to see how it works in different temperatures. You know, this is something that just sprung up on me right now. I could make plastic model kits. And Chris could also with the tiny homes, you know, the kids could build, you know, like an erector set. This has all been extremely, extremely helpful call today. And, you know, I stayed up really late last night cause I was doing the GoFundMe and, you know, you know, once I latch onto something, I don't let go till it's done.
Right.
So my next goal is to get the eBay site up yesterday. So I'm going to do that.
Well, you got me thinking. Yeah, we're going to continue this tomorrow. I can pre-cut kits because I'm thinking I know at least four or five women. That's all they do is they go to IKEA, and they get some. They buy a kit and they take it home and they assemble it themselves.
And they put it together.
No, books, you know,
what's beautiful about that, it creates jobs, this creates jobs for people that, I mean, think about what you just said, the ladies that are buying kits, assembling them and selling them, right? Well, some people don't want to build stuff. You know, like I said, some people have more money than time.
Some people just want a turnkey situation.
Exactly.
But in order to save money, that can be offered. But a lot of, like, say, I know, like, my ex-wife, she still does it. Right, Mac? We talk every now and then. She still does IKEA.
When I go by IKEA, the parking lot is full. People are coming out with huge carts with stuff on them.
Yep.
And almost everything that they are picking up, they've about got to do some assembly to it.
Exactly.
Right. And that's the key thing here. You know, people can not only build it, but they get the satisfaction of seeing what it is they built. And also, these things we're talking about make you money.
And they can customize it also. They can also customize it.
Exactly. I mean, everything's customized. I mean, you can buy one that is this.
Even after they buy it, they can customize it, right? If they have some carpentry skill or whatever,
you
know
what? It's better if they customize
whatever they want.
Right. It's better if they customize it because I'm just looking at, you know, there'll be less complaints coming back. If they put it together themselves.
That's why we wanted to do the roadside model houses. Yeah,
right.
That's why we wanted to go do the roadside model houses, so that way people could design their own home. When they push enter, they decided it. We did not. It was their visuals, everything they added, everything they done it themselves. Now, they're part of their build, and that's the beautiful part behind that. They become part of the build.
That's true.
And that's right immediately. So now they're on vacation, but they just built their new vacation home. Okay, next time they come, it'll be sitting there for them.
That's
so
brilliant.
You know, people need to look at that because as we do that, we want to then get all those old RV parks, all those RV parks that are empty right there in Florida right now. We need to take them over. And we need to be able to offer a vacation home for people, or they can Airbnb it, or they can work with a program there in the community until we get the people off the street and on their feet.
You know, Chris, one thing I like about what you're doing is with, like the Erector Set, that's the visual I got in my mind. You can put up an Erector Set guest house in your backyard, and then when your guest is gone, disassemble it. I'm thinking you wouldn't even need to pull a permit for that. I'm just thinking out loud.
You know,
because it's not a permanent bill. I mean, you put. Go ahead.
They'll give you a temporary permit that's good for almost a year. So if you take a temporary permit that's good for a year, and you take that and you take it down, you don't have it sitting up. My house will hold up into itself. Just by the material alone, you can take all the studs loose and pile it up, and a 10-foot by 10-foot house that's 16-foot tall is only 6 inches tall and 4 feet wide. Now that's the entire frame. Now the sheeting that comes off of it, it will unscrew and come off just like it went on, and you can put it right back because it's already cut. So you can reassemble this thing just as easy as you disassembled it. It actually comes apart faster than it went together. Because when you're going together, you're drilling the holes, and when you're not, you're just taking the screws out. If you don't want to disassemble the walls are only 3.5 inches wide. With the siding and everything, you're up to about 5 inches. So when you're sitting with a 5-inch wall, you can just move it and put it against the wall. You can lay it down on the ground and stack it up, and it'll only be just the four walls that are sitting there is going to be roughly, you know, 20 inches. Now,
right.
the trusses, on the other hand, they're going to be about 40 inches. But you can stack the trusses right on top of the walls. The trusses and set them off on the side, stand up the walls, put the trusses on top of it, and put it back together.
Hmm.
So you can disassemble this thing, and I'm not putting it on hinges. I probably could. Then it just fold down the walls all together, and maybe unhook, two of them and stack them on top. But I could drop one of them for sure. If I raise that wall up over there and made it a 6-inch or a 7-inch little knee wall, I could put a hinge on that wall and actually drop it. So I could fold all four of my walls together. I would just have to build a wall on top of a wall. But I could hinge it and just set that wall right down on top of itself. It's sitting on a box. It's 8 feet wide, ever so tall. And the only difference would be is I would have to build, I'd give you a few extra pieces of track, shorten the studs for each of the walls that I needed, and make them, the other ones, a little short studs that I do need. So I could fold the house up if that's what you want. It's all what you want. I don't care what you want. Anything you can dream about, we can build. Anything you can imagine, we can build. I don't care what it is. I want your imagination to fly. I want you to look at every architectural thing you're going to see in your city and every other city. We can build it. We can build anything.
Brother, let's build one of my greenhouses somewhere. I would so want to see the steel frame version of what I built in my backyard with some like rammed earth or, some nice rammed earth or poured in place concrete walls. I can picture it. It would be incredibly beautiful. And it would last thousands of years.
The thing about it, doing something with a poured, concrete wall is everybody needs to realize it is permanent. Once you do it, it's sitting there unless, Mother Nature decides to try to come and take it. But it's actually a pretty durable wall. It's a very durable wall. Thing about that concrete, though, is the mimosa termite will eat it. So, we had to look at what flaws is going on and what nature is still trying to eat on. They can't eat steel.
But need insulation. Understood. I'm talking a steel frame with poured in place concrete, or better yet, rammed earth. Rammed earth is really what we want to do because it's super sustainable. You use local dirt and clay to make the walls, and you pack them down into a frame, and that makes the wall. And that's how the Great Wall of China is rammed earth. It's still up. And you can treat it with materials and make it waterproof and all that, fireproof, termite-proof, et cetera. That's what I'm looking at for the passive solar design.
No, I get it. Mm. I mean, the one thing is, though, is like when I was down there in the Gulf region and I built that house in 2006, that house is 10 feet off the ground on stilts that were already there. I did not put the stilts in the ground. The house was taken off the stilts that were there, but the only thing that was left was the stilts. So we built a 2,500-square-foot home right on top of those stilts. And at some point, those pylons, everything that's out of the they have to be coated, because when wood is exposed to air, it dries out. It continues to dry. It never stops. It is an organic living product that is, out there. So that wood has to be replaced. Same thing with pole barns. People are building these pole barns. They love them. You got to put your trusses 8 feet, you can put them 8 feet apart. This is great. And the thing is everything that's below the concrete is going to be fine. Everything above it, there's going to be a problem. Even if it's treated, it does not matter. It will rot. So I built a building just like a pole barn, but the difference was that pole barn trusses, every 8 feet.
What is that, Chris? I don't know construction. What is that material you're talking about? Palmar? I didn't understand it.
Pole barn. It's a utilitarian building. Yeah, pole barn.
Okay.
So just like the barn you'd see out at the farm, but it's built out of poles. They take in and put them in the ground, and they got the poles that go above it.
They're wood?
Yeah, they're made of wood.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. So typical barn construction, like a barn raising or whatever they call it.
Of what happened. Now, they have to put purlins that run the other direction. So they have the stand-up poles, and then they take like 8-foot, 12-foot purlin, you know, wood, and they are 16-footers, and they run them and tie those poles together, but they run them so you have something to attach your siding to. Well, they do it for the roof as well. So it adds a lot of material. So all those studs that had to be put in there just to put the siding on, if they would have did it this other way, they would have had to put some more material to it for the trusses, but they had enough material to frame all the walls. So what I did is I built one. It was 100 feet, or it was 60 feet wide and 100 feet long. That building, or no, it was 50 feet wide, 100 feet long. And that building was free span, no center poles. That was a 50-foot truss, solid, and I made it with the machine right there, and I put the machine inside the building, and we started manufacturing these houses out of it. That was the machine that got vandalized on me in 2012. But that machine built the building that it actually worked out of. Fired it up and ran the material, and then constructed the building, and then put the machine inside of it and started making a manufacturing facility. The machine, by making this material and doing what we did, we framed it on 2-foot centers. So every 2 foot, there's a stud. Well, every 2 foot, there's a truss sitting right on that stud. So instead of putting them every 8 feet, I had 4 trusses to their 1. But by doing that, that building is a commercial built building, not a pole barn. The value of it is $300, or it was 2, now it's 3. $300 a square foot for that structure. So what it cost us to build it, the extra little bit that we stuck in the trusses, enhanced how much that building is worth because it's built so much better. And now if you look at that 10,000 square foot building worth $300 a square foot, you now have a building worth $3 million. $300, you're going to have to dress it up a little bit. That house, that thing's not dressed up that bit. But say it was only worth $100, and it cost you $250 to build it. You still made $750,000 in value equity. You know, people need to pay attention. It's what you're building with, and what is it worth by having a commercial built home? Your insurance is cheaper. If you do it through the charity, there's added advantages there. But that's because it's time to pick our people up. And the weakest link we have is how strong our chain is. So I want to pick those weak links up. We have to. And I can't save everybody. I know that. For a fact, and this week has shown it to me more than anything. I've had an eye-opening week. But the difference is I opened my eyes, and I'm not weak. I'm still strong. I'm still getting my phone calls. I'm still helping people along. And right now, we need to do this. And every day that those machines ain't running 24 hours a day, I'm going to be on here saying why. People need to hear this. Share this blog thing to everybody you know. Put it on your Facebook. Put it on your Instagram. If you put it anywhere, put it anywhere. Go through your WhatsApp. I don't care. Share it. Share the one yesterday. People need to hear. You know, right now, the only reason that you might have a family member out there hurting is because they don't know. Everybody needs to know. And, I mean, there's three of these machines ready to fire up and go, dedicated straight for you. Nothing else. Won't even take an order from anybody else because it ain't going to have time once you start calling, right? All right, go ahead. What?
Yeah, no, I know we didn't hit across something today. My wheels are turning. We're going to continue this tomorrow. I guess, Carlos, you'll have the eBay store, whatever, not store, but the eBay part of it set up tomorrow, I guess. Chris, the locations, you have the three, you have them in different locations, the machines?
Yes, there's one in Woodstock, Georgia. There's one outside Lafayette, Louisiana. And there's one in Houston. And then we have Randy's facility that's manufacturing them in Tennessee. And, I have been messaging while I was on here. I have been discussing the trip to L.A. to get this meeting going with the mayor and the chief of staff. The message I got was, if the mayor's not available, the chief of staff will be. So I was like, I put it out there that I'm trying to plan a trip, and I'd like to take a package with me because I want to do a demonstration. I don't want to talk about it. I want to show them. And I'm like, here it is. Boom. What are we going to do? Are you ready? Are you ready? Stated the emergency. I'm here answering it. That's it. And it's not about me. It's what you guys are going to do. All I'm doing is saying, look, I'm leading you to turning on your dimmer switch. All I'm doing is making the first click. I that thing's spin on around there is totally up to you, you know. But I definitely have been having that conversation while we've been on the podcast. And maybe he's listening right now, you know, the one I'm talking with. He is an amazing man. He has helped tens of thousands of kids. Okay. This guy is amazing. And everything's, you know, happens for a reason, right? I didn't have my meeting with L.A. yet with the old mayor. But I had it set up to have. I've had one meeting with someone in the mayor's office, and it was to support Tiny Town CA. And that is an organization doing something in L.A. And I'm a partner, you know, collaboration with them. You know, I always want to help and let people know that, you know, there is things that are happening. But, you know, that's when I found out that, and actually I said a wrong number yesterday. I said up to $200,000 a person, and I thought about it. And I was like, wait a minute, that's not right. It's $500,000 for one person in a certain part of L.A.
Okay.
So that's the number. So if the certain zip code, they go by zones there. So it's either, you know, zone whatever, but they're zones. So 1 through 5, 6, 7, you know, if you're in this zone, they have an allocation for how much it is per person. So LA has a different price point, but I'm wanting to say the lowest price point that I heard was $90,000 a person to house them for 1 year.
Well,
the money's available. The money's available to make the payment every month. They're ready to go. They'll even write a check for the whole amount for the whole year if you need it. So there is a lot and a lot of opportunity in that city because of the problem, but also because there's some people in that city that really do care. They work for the city. I spoke with them.
Right.
And we were able to get some funding for Tiny Town through the city. So I know it's there. and they'll say yes to it. And I'm talking, it's something that can move very fast. There's no red tape to go through, no hoops to jump. It's if you can offer it, they will take it. And that's what I know. And, you know, when we had the conversation with them, you know, it was going to cost like $90,000 to have 10 units in operation, right? And
yeah.
The city says, so $90,000 a unit, that's what you need? And they said, no, we can do it for $90,000 for all 10 units. But they were going to give them
$900,000.
So
that's a nice payday.
I want you to think about that. That was all in a comment that could have gave them enough funding to move a huge thing to move forward. But just for 10 units, they were going to get $90,000 a unit. But instead, they were able to do it for $90,000 for 10 of them. So that's what they asked for, and they got it. And without a doubt,
okay.
That was just 10 units. So
right.
Know that it's there. I know it's there, and there ain't no doubt. And we've got somebody that's amazing that is the I'm going to see if I get his title right. He is the community outreach program director for LA. And it's because of how and what he's done throughout his years in LA. He's got the whole entire football league that he created, and you know, he has helped, like I said, all of his youth programs. He's an amazing, amazing man. And you know, I was introduced to him through somebody else that's amazing, that's trying to do some amazing things. But you know, he knows all these people personally, and he introduces me. So I met this man, and I know that we can make a difference, and we can make it now. We don't have to wait, because the longer we wait, there's more vultures that are out there. But if we show
That's
up
true.
With a package or two, if we show up with a package or two, everybody's going to get a clue, because every news agency will have it posted. It'll be nationwide. It'll be running across the world, because the world's got this. It's up to the world to take it. So, you know, we're here. The factories are here. We want to make a difference here, but we want to make a difference there. So everywhere you are, because I don't know who's on here. I've been sharing this thing all over the world. So this podcast, when I hit the button, I don't know where it goes. But that's the beautiful thing about sharing, right? I could sit here
right,
and listen.
Right.
And just by the time I'm sitting here listening, I could be sharing it, because I'm still listening. And if I need to come on, I unmic and I'm there, but I can be sharing it. And that's what I do. So, you know, that's been nice to see people coming on, you know, and you know, I don't know how many views we've had, but, you know, I got to try. So
right.
I put the seed out there, and that's what I do. But right now, we need to plant those seeds in those greenhouses, but we need to get them built. But we need to get people in a greenhouse, a green-built home, with a greenhouse, making you green. Come on. I mean, that to me, if we're able to hit you in the financials and pay you back for buying our house, why ain't you bought it? If your greenhouse will pay for both of those, why ain't you buying it? When you buy
a
car, it depreciates.
Right,
when
that's
true. When you buy a car, it depreciates. When you buy this, it appreciates, and you'll appreciate yourself for doing it.
Very good selling point. Very good. Chris, I'm going to let you hit. Well, that was the last word of the day. We're going to pick back up on this tomorrow. I'm going to be exploring more, well, some of the ideas that were put out here, because I'm ready to roll with it.
And on
that note, everyone, Carlos.
And I've got a challenge. If I could just say one last thing before we go.
Sure.
My challenge
for
today is to put up the OU812 aquaponics eBay store. That's what I'm going to get done today. So when we
All
talk
right, so
tomorrow,
now,
that store will be up.
It'll be up. Great. All right. We'll pick back up tomorrow morning. See you guys then.